This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Seek the assistance of your healthcare provider for medical conditions. The views and opinions of podcast guests do not necessarily reflect the views, policies, or positions of the Clifton Health Department or City of Clifton. Please be advised that the topics discussed in this episode may be sensitive and could be triggering depending on your current life circumstances. We encourage you to listen with care and take breaks if needed. If you find the content overwhelming, please consider reaching out to a trusted friend, family member, or professional for support.
Welcome to Clifton Health On Air. I'm your host, Danielle.
And I'm Crystal. I'll also be co-hosting today.
And I'm your co-host, Lauren.
And we are a local health department podcast here in Clifton, New Jersey.
We are located 12 miles west of New York City.
And we also service the township of Little Falls.
Welcome. Before we jump in today's episode, we want to take a moment to thank all veterans who have served our country. Today's special episode is where we honor two of our own employees from the Clifton Health Department that have served in our country's armed forces. Nathaniel King, Social Services Assistant, who served in our country's Army. And Anthony Bartlett, Lead Inspector, who served in our country's Air Force. Welcome.
Thank you.
What's up, ladies?
Before we dive in, I just wanted to share a little history about Veterans Day. Veterans Day honors and celebrates all those who served the country. It is observed on November 11th of every year, regardless of what day of the week it falls on. Veterans Day was established in 1919, and it was initially known as Armistice Day. We celebrate Veterans Day to thank our veterans that served our country. Our armed forces include the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, and Space Force. It became an official federal holiday in 1938, and the name was officially changed to Veterans Day in 1954 to honor Americans of all wars.
Anthony, can you tell us about yourself?
Sure, no problem. So I was in the Air Force. I served, I think I enlisted February or March of 02. And I served till March of 06. I was in the Air Force. I signed up as Security Forces, which is rebranded as Military Police. It's the same thing. I was stationed at Edwards Air Force Base in California in the Mojave Desert. I was there my whole 4 years. I did do two tours in Iraq. One tour in Iraq and one in Qatar. I did 7 months each tour. My last tour was, I think I did 04 to 05 and then 05 to 06. And I got back like October of 05. And then I got out in March of 06. over there, we did security. We did security for the base. We did patrols, various things over there. First time I was there, it was very dangerous. A lot of violence happening shortly, a few years after 9/11. A lot of people did not appreciate us being there. The second time I went, it was more of a base in Qatar that we provide security for and stuff like that, but it was a base where a lot of people went after their tour in Iraq. It was like a safer spot to be, so they would come there. They would
out-process.
Right. Yeah, out-process for a couple of weeks or a month, and then they would go back to the States. I was a senior airman. I did my 4 years, got out, did 4 years of an inactive reservist, and then that was it.
Thank you for sharing your story. I know it's not really easy for the both of you to kind of backtrack and go back there. So I wanted to say thank you for allowing us in to hear your stories and for your service. Nate, are you able to share your story?
Yeah, I signed contracts, went into the Army when I was about 17, turning 18. In February of 2003. I went in as a Signal Corps. I was a computer, radio, hardware, and software specialist. While in 03 to 2011, I jumped around. I was in Korea for about 2.5 years. Went back to like Fort Gordon, Georgia, where my AIT training was for a couple years too. Did a deployment under General Petraeus' C6 operation that he had in Baghdad, the Surge that we called it in 06 to 2008, where we were trying to overwhelm the enemy forces with the number of soldiers. While I was there, I was with 3rd Infantry. We were working with a bunch of contractors and a bunch of multinational countries like Japan, Russia, and all the other countries in Baghdad and FOB Victory, where we were working for a contractor agency called, I think it was called RipperNet. Yeah, it was Joint Network Command Center, again, out of FOB Victory. While there, we were exposed to a lot of combat situations, a lot of mortars, a lot of gunfire, a lot of explosives and everything like that. But while working there, it was an amazing experience just to be able to jump every FOB, forward operating base, or every combat operating base and help them set up with their server rooms and teaching generals and lieutenant colonels and majors and lower-ranking to high-ranking individuals and contractors how to...
During that time, what rank were you?
I was E4 going to E5 and then E5 just to the rest of my deployment, like half of the military, yeah.
And that was up until 2011?
Yeah, so I just maintained that rank, okay. And yeah, that was my deployment to Baghdad was an interesting one, and Iraq in general. Then we, like Anthony was saying, you go back to Kuwait or Qatar for out processing, but then I ended up staying a little bit longer, started doing stuff with Afghan and other countries where I can help out. And then when I got back to the States and got out of the military in 2011, ended up working at the East Orange VA and did that for 3 years as a whole health and wellness coach. They teach you how to just be a combat soldier in the military. They teach you how to survive. But a lot of these vets, when they come back, they don't teach them how to live after deployment, after your service is no longer needed. You take off that uniform, and suddenly an overwhelming pressure and an overwhelming feeling takes over these vets. So I was able to help these veterans come back from combat situations, or even older cats from Vietnam period, or just helping them understand what it looks like to have goals in life or things that they wanted to live for. So I started going into that direction with my life on helping veterans and helping people in my world. And it's been an amazing adventure I've been on so far. And I look forward to many more years working with the health department doing what I do with the veterans and the unhoused.
Yeah, I was just going to say, to follow up on Nate, when I was there, it was Operation Iraqi Freedom, Operation Enduring Freedom, mm-hmm. were the two, I'm sure, that overlapped with what Nate was doing.
They bled into each other.
Yeah. What Nate was saying about when I was in Qatar was that, like, the out-processing, mm-hmm. a lot of that is, they do it depending on where you were, but a lot of that is to help people adjust almost like a transition period before you go back to the States, because it is a big difference when you're in wartime and you're getting bombed or shot at and stuff like that. Your mentality has to be a certain way, mm-hmm. For you to survive out there and to help your fellow soldiers
battle buddies
survive, mm-hmm. and everything like that. So it's not something you can just like turn off. You know, people might think that, you know, who haven't done it, but it's not. It does take a period of time just to even get your mindset in the right place. And that's why, like, a lot of times, a lot of veterans and stuff like that have a hard time coming home because, you know, if they serve their time like I did. I served until October, came out, you get a month off, whatever it was, and then I had, like, 3 months of vacation time because I didn't take any the whole time I was there, and then I'm out, and then it's like, oh, what do you do now, you know? Mm-hmm. And especially coming back from something where you're seeing a lot of action, mm-hmm. it really is key to get help transitioning out of that. And that's why a lot of people have issues coming back, or, you know, turn to alcohol or
substances. Or overdose or become homeless, unhoused. Sorry.
And I'm sure, Nate, that you can talk a bit more about that in a second. But I wanted to touch base with what you mentioned about the mindset that you have to have while you're there versus the mindset coming home and that switch. Could you just share a little bit more about, you know, the difference between the two and how that switch, you know, happened for you maybe?
Yeah, no, it's about surviving. You know, when you're over there, you know, your whole goal is you and to help your battle buddy survive. It's hard to...
You're letting go of your family. You're letting go of your kids. You're missing years of people growing without you.
I had several buddies had kids they didn't even see until they're like 5-6 months old.
And that's not including divorce rates. Divorce rates went through the roof during deployments. Cheating, spouse.
All kinds of stuff happens. But the transit, like, you know, so when you're over there, you're
prepared for it because you're battle buddy and you are going through the thick of it together.
Yes.
Without
you're
each other.
Trying to make them, you're there for them.
You hold
them.
On for them. Yes. You hold on to survival.
They're as tight as your family at that point.
Your brothers and sisters in arms.
You're probably closer than some stuff with, you know, some stuff you have to do together and stuff. You're almost closer than you would with some family just because of the stuff you had to go through.
Things that you had to relate with mm-hmm. that you couldn't explain to a civilian. A civilian, you have your day to life, and everyone's trauma is different. Everyone's trauma is as important to them as it is to anyone else. But a combat vet, it's a whole different ball game. You're being told to just turn off, and like Anthony was saying, get back in society and figure it out. There's no instruction manual. There's no, here's this process. You need to go to VA. You need to check off with a counselor. You need to talk to this person. There's like a one-month period of out-processing. And after you're done doing the out-processing, you're turning in all your equipment. That's all they care about. They're just trying to clear their ledger and get the equipment back.
It would be like, you know, somebody's having, you know, some mental health issues and mm-hmm. they go to talk to a psychiatrist or something and they go for a month and then it's like, oh, you're cured. Usually it takes longer than a month, you know, yeah. Usually definitely. You're meeting once a week or.
But with veterans, you're learning how to navigate the VA system additional to the combat situation that you've already been through. So you're being prescribed medication that might not be compliant with your body, or you might be labeled as non-compliant in general in the hospital and being told that you're non-compliant, not getting help because you're non-compliant is a disservice to the veterans. So we do a lot of navigating with the East Orange VA when I was working there, was teaching veterans how to have a mindfulness, a meditation, not as much as a pharmaceutical dependency, but we do recommend that you do get prescriptions. We do recommend that you do talk to a professional, calibrate what medications you're on, what milligrams, dosages, what certain things might not work with your chemical compound of who you are. But just be mindful of the entirety of healing. Yeah, sorry.
No. I was just going to say when we were talking about mindset and stuff, like think about it, like, I went in at 18. Most people go in mm-hmm. 18 to 20 unless you go in as an officer after school or whatever.
ROTC school.
ROTC. Rocks, yeah. But, like, so I was 18. By the time I went to go to Iraq, I was 19. So at 19, I had to sign a will mm-hmm. Saying who's going to get the $250,000 when I died.
That's
you know, will. Who's going to get my wife at the time or, you know, my mom or little brother or sisters or if you have kids. Like,
that's a reality check.
That's a reality. Like, you, and I had to sign two of them because you each time you go, you have to sign your will in case something happens. And so it's like, just think about that. At 19, you're saying, like, oh, if I die. And then I'm sure Nate can relate, like, yeah. at our base, we used to get bombed a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, every day we get bombed. But it would depend... Honestly, they're very inaccurate where they were shooting from.
Yeah.
But we get bombed every day. And it was like, it sounds like such a scary thing, but it almost normalizes mm-hmm. after a while. Like after like 2 weeks, I could sleep through it. Yeah. I didn't even know it happened until like, somebody told me the next, you know, when I got up, like, yeah, we got bombed earlier over here or whatever. It normalizes. So like to normalize that, normalize getting into a firefight or normalize, like I had a buddy who was a Marine that lived in a hole for a month and a half, mm-hmm. you know, basically like didn't get a shower, you know, he's using wipes to wipe the special areas and that's it, you know?
Yeah.
And to just say, okay, 1 month and then you're back to your regular life. It's a mental switch that doesn't go right off. And like Nate was saying, like some people get on medication right away or whatever. It's not an easy transition. I think that's why you see a lot of homeless vets mm-hmm. and a lot of stuff like that, just because they, you know, they could never figure out what would work for them in the transition back.
They went in as kids, and that was their life. Some of them had, like, the goals like mine was I was going to do this as a career for the rest of my life. And I still miss my soldiers, but I experienced certain things with certain operations, with certain agencies that I wasn't happy with, and I wanted to step away from that environment. So I thought I was going to get out, get into college, get married or something, probably go back in or figure things out. And I realized, you know what, it's probably best if I didn't. A lot of individuals become officers because, or police officers, because that uniform transition, you're still running into your battle buddies.
It's a brotherhood.
It's a brotherhood that you've created, and you need, a lot of them need that period of some relation. That
you need somebody else with the same similar experience that you can, I'm not saying you sit there and cry your heart out to them, but at least they're on the same level of knowing what you experienced. Yeah, trauma.
You're finding trauma that fits your trauma. Yes. And being able to relate with trauma, they say it's not good for relationships, but it might help with people who are just trying to help figure out how to get the next step. How to lace up their boots and tie them up and go for the day.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm hearing that it was quite the experience for both of you. And again, thanks for walking us through it, because it sounds, and I'm sure it was, a lot to experience, right? So what I'm hearing is when you're there, you're just focused on survival and you're really relying on your brothers and sisters, as you were saying, in arms. So in your unit, people come from different states and they go, so how do you stay connected? Was that part of the process of coming back? Did that help at all? Or is it just completely disconnected? And then you're just, again, in that month period, expected to, you know, have that time to try to adjust, perhaps, you know, seek some mental health and then jump right back in. For you, what kind of resources did you rely on that helped you transition back?
That's a hard question, because I was lucky enough to have family, that like a brother that really got me through a lot of the stuff that I went through. A girlfriend that was very patient with me with dealing with a lot of me. She should get a combat badge for it. But it's not everyone's the same. And like I said, I was in Iraq when I reenlisted for my second tour. And I was hoping to be in there forever, career soldier. But coming back to States and wanting to figure out how to just shed that layer of life was a learning experience. It's really impossible to answer, because again, not everyone's the same. The VA, luckily the East Orange VA with us, they were going through some changes and got a little bit better compared to what the Vietnam veterans went through and the World War II and Korean War veterans went through. Mm-hmm. But again, during COVID and other times, it's gotten a little bit worse. So it's reversing. So the help is still there. We got great campuses like Lyons, East Orange VAs. But networking and getting in contact with other soldiers is everything, I think.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, I was, I guess, from Maine and New Jersey, but New Jersey for high school and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But I was in California, so I'm on the opposite coast. So mm-hmm. I didn't have anybody out there that I was, like, family members, at least, from where I was. I was married at the time. I was engaged, went on my tour, came back, got married, and then I got sent again 3 months later. Mm-hmm. And that second time really put a big gap. So like Nate was saying, like, his girlfriend was very understanding, still with her now. I didn't have that in a way. I like the gap sometimes, like, can bring you closer and sometimes it can push you apart. And I think in my case, it was like 7 months leaving somebody, coming back for 3 months, and then leaving for another 7 months.
Puts a toll.
It took a toll. It put too much of a gap, and it was like, even though she knew I was in the military, even though she knew I was probably gonna, it's still hard for somebody to be left by themselves for that long a period of time, and it never was the same. It kept, like, pushing further and further apart, and then eventually we were like, it's just not working, you know, like, I think there was some resentment that I had left, and I get it too. It's very tough, and it's not like, you know, it's not like the soldiers want to go. Well, I take that back. I wanted to go the first time. Yeah. I did. I didn't think I'd go that close back to back.
There's a burnout. Yes. There's a burnout period where it's my unit, 3rd Infantry. By the time I got to them in 06, they already been deployed like, I want to say, 10, almost a dozen times.
Is there any counseling when you're considering the next tour? So, or is it just totally up to you?
No, there's no counseling. It's literally the needs of the Army. And that's why I was stop lost. It's something where the military stops you from leaving the military just so that you can fill an obligation of lack of soldiers in the military.
During wartime, you can
stop lost.
But stop loss.
So that's why I reenlisted another reason why. But you have no choice. If your unit's deploying, you're getting rotation into that deployment. The only way that you could probably get out of a deployment is if there's medical reasons.
Pregnancy,
which is additional medical reasons.
Female getting pregnant.
But the women have the choice to go back to the deployment after labor, I think. And there's various degrees of reasons why you don't have to deploy. But a normality out there was seeing people going through hardship with their families, seeing divorce rising, having people go through suicidal tendencies, having battle buddies that you have to take the firing chamber away from them off their weapons so that they don't dispend it on themselves. Mm-hmm.
I had a buddy that was in, had a wife, same thing. And he 2 months in finds out that she was cheating on him. She emptied his whole bank account, took everything in the house, and bounced. And
that's a normal thing.
And he had 5 more months to go. Couldn't do anything. He was trying to call the landlord because he couldn't make a payment. I mean, we're over there. They didn't really have a ton of stuff available. But it's like, you know, and it's like you're trying to help him and try to walk him through. Like, it's all right, man, we'll work through it. But it's like, just think about that. You know, like, you're over there. Yeah. You're already in a mental place where you're trying to survive and you're getting, people trying to kill you. And then back home, you have somebody just wiped out everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like,
how do you get back from that? How do you survive on two fronts of a war zone when the rest of Americans, less than 1% of Americans actually serve in armed forces during our combat deployments? So the fraction of Americans can only understand, barely even a fraction of them can understand what you're going through.
Yeah.
So on top of that, you're
it's not only like the war stuff, it's like stuff at home too is going on. Like Nate said, a lot of cheating happens, a lot of stuff like that. And so it's like, to have that in the back of your head as well on top of everything that's going on.
A mortar coming in on you, or a gunfire that you had to be there to protect your battle buddy. Those are all the outliers that you're not predicting. It's a lot of weight on your shoulders. The human experience is what you're experiencing while experiencing combat survival. And again, like Anthony started off with, a lot of us didn't, we kind of knew why we were in Iraq and Afghanistan. A lot of us didn't really want to be there, and they didn't want us to be there.
They did not like us there at all. It's not like people were certain countries, or you see it in like movies or something, and there's a welcoming,
you saved us. It was a lot of confusion of why we should even be there to begin with. So when you're fighting a war that there's no consent on why we're even there, or
sort of like Vietnam War.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of just, politics of everything, the nature of the politics. You're trying to help people, but you're also trying to process the reason why you just took someone's life, the reason why you just had a round shot at your head, or sniper round go off, or take your buddy, a best friend of yours that's not coming back with you. You know, you're trying to process all this and process a family at home. And every generation of combat veteran have gone through this in one way or another, right? Vietnam, World War II, World War I, Korean War. All of them have gone deployed, had to give up a lot of their life in general. And thank God we're in this generation where we're trying to understand the mindfulness of everything.
If you think about the Vietnam veterans, when they came home, they were
spat on, called baby killers, and they were assigned numbers. They were given a lottery number and said, you're deploying.
They didn't have a choice.
Yes.
No.
And they were told, you're going with your best friend from up the block that didn't come back with you after that deployment.
So you lost neighborhoods. What are you supposed to do? Like, you know, either you become a Canadian, I guess, at that time.
Or
you enlist and, you know, your chances are your chances, but you don't have, or not enlist, but you drafted or whatever.
Yeah.
And they didn't have a choice, you know, and very sad. At least, like Nate said, there's more, they're looking for people that give them help and stuff like that, so they don't have to quite go through what they did.
And to circle back to what you were asking, Crystal, there's no counseling with when you had to fire a round off. There's no, Let's check in on this veteran to see how they're doing. You're told about a VA, this theoretical help in the end. A lot of veterans don't seek that help. A lot of veterans avoid it like it's a plague, like it's a disease or a label.
Why do you think that is? Is it because...
The stigma of mental illness.
They get stigma, mentally strong.
Yeah, the stigma of not being able to carry a gun on you because you're labeled with PTSD. The labels that stick with you and told that that's who you are now. And that's the thing that's very important. And if you
Now, is that the stigma in
the
between the brothers and the brotherhood? Or is that the stigma when you guys come back
that
and transition
stigma,
here?
That stigma is never spoken amongst brothers and sisters in arms. That stigma is never even addressed. What it is when you're trying to get out of that and you're trying to find an avenue of help, and trying to shed that layer, because this new word, stigma, this new terminology of calling things a stigma of is new, correct, right? It's not like we've been saying we need to address psychology and sociology as a stigma, as PTSD, as a rewiring of the brain, a disease like you would treat cancer, heart disease. Right. This is new. This is a whole new ballgame. And so by just addressing this idea that you might be experiencing something that is literally killing you, because PTSD, stress, all that stuff, it's eating you away. It's changing who you are. You're no longer that person.
You weren't the person you were when you came
when
in.
When you went in, that young kid that's willing to die and not thinking about living and was just volunteering to sign up to save some country that you believe in. And I do love this country. I would do it all over again. But you're going in with that idea and not thinking about the long term is after this, how am I going to live with this? How am I going to live with this new version of me, that voice that kicks in the back of your head in the middle of a winter night when you don't have your uniform on anymore and it says, go kill yourself. Mm. Who's that voice that's talking to you? So you got to really address those parts that you're not thinking about when you're in combat and you're getting out of the military or you're processing.
Or like Nate was saying, like the voices in your head that you just want to get out of your head, right? Like that.
The memories.
The memories and the flashbacks. And that's why, you know, some people... You know, 4th of July and fireworks, you know.
That explosive
the
noise.
Explosive noises can really affect people, certain people, depending on what their experiences were.
Mine was agoraphobia for a while there with tunnels. At the end of each tunnel was always like an IED or something that was ready to just take you out. So it was anything on the side of the road.
Exits in a building. Mm-hmm. I always had to know, like, where the exit door, as soon as I walked in, that was the first thing I was looking for. Where are the exits?
Sweeping your...
What can I get out? Yeah,
is
left
that
to right.
Because you didn't trust kind of where you were?
You need
were,
an exit plan. You need plan A, plan B, plan C.
You don't
C.
know what's going to happen, yeah. So you need to know where to get out, when, you know, what's available, that type of thing.
It's an uncomfortable list to sit with your back towards the door with an outlier of shadows moving behind you, so you try to address everything before it becomes a conflict, before it becomes the outlier that you got to engage in.
You know what? Thank you both for this robust information. I want to give kudos to you for sharing that. It's not easy at all. But I do want to ask a question. Now that you both are out, what can we do as a society to help our veterans? What is there to do? How can we help them? Is there something we can... work towards, and is the VA getting a bit better? I know, Nate, you're really involved.
Teach a veteran to advocate for themselves, but get them involved in with Veterans Affairs. If they could call Veterans Affairs at 1-800-827-1000, get a case. Start your process with your experience of what you're going through. Get a percentage. Once you get a percentage, try to get that veteran help through the VA. Get them into a local vet center. Like we have Bloomfield, which has a great vet center for counseling. East Orange has a psychological wing, I think of floor 13 or 12 is for their psych. I haven't been there for a bit. I go to the vet centers. So go to Building 17 at East Orange. Also, if you're in New Jersey, Building 17 is for mindfulness, Eastern philosophies, meditation, Tai Chi. Dr. Cotter directs that one. She's an awesome director. She really cares about her veterans. If you can, get them involved with the local organizations like VFW, American Legion. I'm in American Legions in Hoboken, but the DAV, any of those agencies where they can actually get out and hang out with some veterans. There's all kinds of programs that pop up. Boston has one with their local baseball team. Home Base is a great organization where they help veterans get on their feet. but just talk to someone. Advocate for your veteran to be heard, but also the family to be heard, because they're not experiencing alone. I can promise you that family is going through the thick of it with that veteran, and they're trying to learn how to live this new life. And then remember, if you know any veterans, first off, if you're dealing with some kind of like suicidal tendencies or anything, call 988, talk to a specialist, talk to a professional. But and homelessness, if you're running into any veterans who are experiencing homelessness, there's a nationwide number that you got to call, 211. But if you can, get them involved with an agency that we have called Bring Veterans Home. Bring Veterans Home is trying to get all unhoused veterans into some kind of housing program. But Bring Veterans Home is actively getting veterans homes. Homeless veterans, they will get them a home. So reach out to Bringing Veterans Home. Utilize the resources that we know and share your resources. Don't be a silo gatekeeper. Don't create these boundaries.
And thank you so much for sharing all those resources. We'll definitely have those numbers in the description box below. And Anthony, is there anything, if you could create an ideal world for veterans after they get out of serving, what would that look like?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it would depend on like what their experience were, but I would say just like Nate said, like there's veteran group stuff. I think like being around people with similar experiences and maybe, you know, people who have been out longer, who have been through it and have hands-on experience of what it took for them to get back to where they were being productive in society. And I would say just being around more people that have groups and stuff like that, that have been through it, that can share their experience and share what helped them get through it. I think that would be the best thing, at least in my experience, for everybody or for the veterans and stuff like that.
Definitely. I think that's what I've been hearing from both of you, is relying on others and not, you know, kind of isolating yourself, because nothing
is not going to help.
Yeah. None of us could solve anything alone. No. And absolutely. advocacy for everyone. Have empathy for everyone too. Mm-hmm. Helps. Don't think that you're the only one that's ever experienced hardship. Just understand that everyone's hardship varies in degree. There are people who are going through college that are having a hard time just getting through college, that it's almost like a combat experience for themselves. But just have empathy. Even if you're a veteran, try to understand that the person next to you is also going through things. And if you can explain to them what you're going through, it might help the journey of you healing.
And that is one of the best ways that we can combat that stigma that you mentioned earlier as well. So thank you again so much for speaking, sharing your experiences, and highlighting all the important work, but also all of the traumatic experiences that come along with the important service that you guys and other veterans of this country and this nation do for us. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Nate and Anthony, for telling us about your experiences, sharing your stories. It means so much to us. I just wanted to take a moment to talk about how Clifton observes Veterans Day. A parade is held in the city of Clifton. The route usually starts by Huron Ave, by the Athena Veterans Post building, goes down to Van Houten Ave, and then Van Houten Ave towards Clifton Ave, and it concludes on the City Hall grounds. You can always check out the website for more information on where it's held. I want to take a moment to talk about the Clifton Avenue of Flags display. John E. Beagle Jr., our health officer's father, along with Walter Pruxma and Keith Oakley, they founded the Avenue of Flags. The flags are displayed all around City Hall property. They are displayed 5 times a year. They're usually up on Memorial Day, Flag Day, the 4th of July, 9/11, which is also known as Patriots Day, and Veterans Day. If you haven't already done so, please check out Clifton's Avenue of Flags. For more information, you can always check the city's website and social media. Before we conclude today's episode, let's just all take another moment to thank all the veterans who have served our country. Your courage, dedication, and sacrifice make the freedoms we enjoy possible. We're deeply grateful for your service. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you guys for doing this.
Thank you guys. Yeah, this was great.
In honor of our veterans, here is the Clifton Mustang Marching Band playing the Armed Forces Medley.